You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Because weddings can be very stressful, they're understandably perfect material for comedies. And A.R. Gurney makes the most of that potential in his latest play, Black Tie, which is having its world premiere at Primary Stages in a very funny and tender production. With me now to discuss it are Ari Brandt, who plays Teddy, the groom, along with Greg Edelman and Carolyn McCormick, who play his parents, Curtis and Mimi. And I'm very pleased that they all could be with us today. Hello. And congratulations. I understand that the play has been extended through March 27th.
That's right.
Are they extending it week by week? Is that how it works? Because it was supposed to go through the 20th.
I think they just added a week on usually because they never know if the other actors are going to have other jobs or I don't know if they're going to do a week by week thing. I think it's probably just going to be that week.
Yes. And then hopefully, I mean, there's some talk. We have some producers circling overhead. And who knows, maybe we might have a life down the road.
But other jobs, because all three of you work in television and have done other stuff in the theater.
Yeah, and you never know what's going to come along. That's one of the mysteries, luxuries, and pains about being an actor.
It's true.
You know, that you just don't know if suddenly you're going to be in L.A. or Toronto or wherever.
Well, weddings can, which are the subject of this, or at least the day before the wedding, can be perfect storms. I don't know whether this is something that you had personal experiences with.
Well, who wants to go into that first?
It's true. You do have the biggest dilemma, I think, in this play is the two sets of in-laws. You only meet one side of the family. But there is, Ari was saying before we came here, there is always that situation where one set of in-laws, there's competition in a weird way. And everyone's trying to be on their best behavior. But at the same time, everyone is judging and looking and questioning. And why are they doing that? Or why are they so fancy? Or why didn't they dress up? Or I mean, there's all that stuff.
And since this is a Pete Gurney play, we're in WASP territory here. At least your family is WASP. The setting in the Adirondacks seems a little tacky for a Gurney play at first, given the plastic paneling and paintings of fish on the walls. So most everybody in the Green side of the family is feeling a bit off kilter.
Yeah,
You start the play off, Greg.
With
the ghost of your father.
That's true. I look in the mirror and I'm getting myself dressed into the tuxedo. That's actually my father's tuxedo. And I sort of, through the magic of theater, my reflection turns into my father's reflection and we go from there.
This is kind of the reverse of a Neil Simon play. Ari, you were in one on Broadway, weren't you?
Yeah, I was part of the ill-fated Brighton Beach Memoirs, Broadway-bound Neil Simon plays Broadway experience.
You ever wonder why ill-fated? I mean, it was a hit the first time and then...
Yeah, well, it's hard to say. There's so many factors that go into putting on a show of that sort of magnitude. I think it's difficult always to put up a Broadway show, especially you have to put some sort of film star in there or you need to market it exactly the right way. And
Somebody flying over the audience.
Yeah, exactly.
And that'll help.
But I must say the revival of that show was exquisite. It should have gone further, I thought. I was amazed that it closed as quickly as it did. It was such a good production.
But I still think about Neil Simon and A.R. Gurney. In some ways, they're in the same kind of territory. In other ways, they mind totally opposite sides of this territory.
Well, that's true. But, you know, like with Brighton Beach Memoirs, it really does explore the family. And that's what A.R. Gurney does and Pete Gurney to us. He has such a fancy name, but he's such an easygoing
And I always wonder how Pete comes out of A.R.
Arthur
Ramsdahl.
That's
a great name. Gurney. I don't know how Pete came out of it. But I think the similarity between Pete and Neil Simon is that they're writing about very real people, but they do it with a very light touch. So you can get the whole humor of human situations and why people behave the way they behave, but they keep it light and they keep it with manners and underneath are all kinds of serious situations.
And wonderful laugh lines that aren't always telegraphed. And I'd imagine that as actors, that's a lot of fun too.
Well, yeah, and people often laugh because they identify with something, not because it's a setup or a specific joke line. It's just they recognize the behavior, and it makes them laugh. The line itself often isn't funny. It's the situation that's set up.
And interestingly enough, too, when we're in rehearsal, sometimes we'll joke about it. We'll say, all right, and this will be a laugh, and I'll wait 5, 6, 7, 8. Because we know it is a punchline. It smells like a punchline. It sounds like a punchline. And then there are other things. Like you say, it's totally takes you by surprise the first few times you put the play in front of an
audience.
But do
audiences tend to be amused at those same things every night?
Yes, they do. And it's
because it's the setup.
It's the relationship that's put on stage that Pete's written that makes
sense. And sometimes you feel the audience is really following the father-son, and then other times you really think they're following the husband-wife bickering, and then sometimes they're following the kids that are annoyed with their parents. And so you do get a different feel from the audience according to what storyline they're really keying into.
And whether it's a matinee or an evening performance,
that's very
how old
true.
The audience is.
That's very true.
I love this line that you say, Greg. Life is a long, incoherent, ungrammatical sentence, and all I can do is try to provide some basic punctuation.
Yes, that's a mouthful, isn't it?
But still, that's to some degree what this is also all about. It's about the rules that we choose to live by. In this case, your character has been very influenced by his father, who may be a bit overbearing, annoying to people, but at the same time has a real sense of the way things should be done.
I think so. I think, you know, that line that you said, it's sort of a pronouncement. It's sort of a little fortune cookie pronouncement he puts out there. And there, you know, there's a lot of hell to pay for making, you know, for living life by that rule. And I think that's where the comedy comes from in this play.
And Carolyn, you're the spouse, or who at least seems to be in favor of being more open to change. You're more politically liberal, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that come from, since both you and Curtis started out, as you describe yourself, as peas in a pod?
Well, I think she's just ready to move forward and keep the peace. And if keeping the peace means learning more about the next generation and what keeps her children happy and what keeps her children interested, she wants to move forward. I think Curtis, especially with the ghost of his father hovering around, is torn. He keeps wanting to go back and readdress traditions of the past. And Mimi very much wants him to start looking forward and appreciate the traditions of his children.
And we don't even see the groom until fairly late. And then suddenly, you play a pivotal part here. You're the groom who's caught between all the different people wanting to pull you this way and that.
Right. It's a very fortunate part. I get to sort of sit backstage for an hour and wait for Greg and Linny and Daniel Davis and Elvie to sort of warm up the crowd, and I get to come in with all the conflict and
well, by then, it's all been piled on.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're thinking, how is he reacting to all of that?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to we did a talk back about a week ago, and I was telling some audience members who stuck around how I like to sit backstage and sort of reenact what's going on downstairs. You know, we're in the hotel room, the rehearsal dinner's happening right downstairs, and so I kind of do the scene that hasn't been written so that I can come on and bring it all on stage.
My guests are Ari Brand, who plays Teddy, Greg Edelman, who plays Curtis, and Carolyn McCormick, who plays Mimi in we could say world premiere. This has never been performed before. Of A.R. Gurney's Black Tie, which is at Primary Stages at 5090 East 59 Theaters at 5090 East 59th Street between Park and Madison Avenues, now running through March 27th. And if you want information about tickets, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. I've talked to actors about appearing in revivals as opposed to appearing in a play for the first time. When you do it for the first time, you really have to invent the character for yourself. You don't have anything to react to, like, oh, I'm not going to do it like Marlon Brando did it in the original production.
Yeah. It's great, though, because when you have a playwright like Pete Gurney who's around all the time and you can come in with, I'm thinking about this character, I wonder if we can change this or tweak this or address this or repeat this idea or maybe give this line to him. It sounds more like my husband than me or a lot of that stuff. So you really become – you feel like, oh, this is really me.
And that was done in rehearsal?
Mm-hmm.
He's open to those kinds of
things? He's completely open.
Some playwrights say, do it the way I wrote it.
Well, he had certain things that he felt very strongly about that he wouldn't adjust. But, you know, he was very appreciative of our input, I think.
I think so, too. I think so, too. And he was such a wonderful, easygoing fellow, too, that he's a fellow. You know, he's that sort of describes him perfectly. That he he really contributes a wonderful spirit to the rehearsal hall. So it's not sort of like a conflict where the author's sitting in the room. It's a wonderful collaboration.
Did he help you understand the parts any better?
Well, I think
you create your own psychology for your
character.
Yeah,
you do.
I mean,
if you have a question, ask him. He would certainly be willing to talk about it. And his insight and his experience with plays is so extensive that you honor, if he says, no, this works, don't change it, you have to say, you don't argue. You think, okay, you know, you've been doing this for a long time and written some amazing plays.
But it's still different than when you're appearing in something like Private Lives, which you starred in on Broadway.
Well, that you don't that you've seen. It's
and
an Noel engine
Coward
that works
come by
beautifully.
Rehearsals.
No, I wish he did.
That might have been fun.
That would have been really fun.
you also might have asked him to change a line or two, I suspect. You were Dr. Oliver on Law and Order for...
Olivet.
For
That's okay.
How long, 20 years?
20 years on and off. I did some series in between there, but so I was sort of in and out.
Were you sorry when it was canceled, or did you feel that it was time to move on?
I was sorry for the actors of New York because it really did keep a lot of us employed and it allowed us to stay in the city and make enough money to still do theater and get a little help with our health insurance through doing a few episodes of television.
Another part of your career is you've been the narrator in countless Ken Burns documentaries.
Yes, I love Ken Burns and I love his documentaries. They're amazing.
So what happens when you turn on the television and say, oh, watch the local PBS station, and there you are again.
I usually change the channel.
Greg, you've been in 14 shows, 4 Tony nominations, but many of them were musicals.
That's right.
So is that what you thought you'd be doing all your career, musicals?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm lucky that I can sing. And
you want to break out into song in this play anytime?
Well, I actually do a little bit. I actually have to be careful.
You keep it tame.
I try to. Good. You've never told me that before. I'm glad. Yeah, Dad, tone it down. But I just, it's also a thing when you're starting out and you have a family that doing musicals is a wonderful thing because they normally pay more than plays. And so it's always been
a longer runs in general.
They do. So it's a bit of a blessing, and I've always embraced those, you know.
But you've also done any number of concert venues, Feinstein's, Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center, toured Europe as doing the equivalent of cabaret?
Well, no, most of my European things were with big orchestras and, you know, like the Gothenburg Symphony and London Symphony Orchestra and those kind of things.
And I understand you have an upcoming solo CD.
I do. What do you have written down there? Let me take a picture.
I have everything here.
Yeah, that's right.
I know things that I'm not going to talk about. Don't want to embarrass you people. And you were also in Law and Order, weren't you?
Yeah,
Were you on with Carolyn ever?
No, I don't think so.
But you weren't a crazy person.
I always play crazy people.
Really?
I always play the crazy murderer who's got this nice face, you know, cuts up people or something like that. terrible things. And then people would say, I saw you on Law and Order. You know, I did all of the three ones they had
right here.
And I was always playing some crazy person doing awful things to people and children. And they would say, I can't believe you played that part. You know?
Ari, do you like to play crazy? Because we mentioned Brighton Beach Memoirs. You also were in Romeo and Juliet. You weren't playing crazy there.
I wasn't.
Did have Shakespeare.
I did have Shakespeare to back me up, yeah, although I didn't have that many lines, so there wasn't that much.
That was Shakespeare in the park?
That was.
Is that as fun an experience as people tell me?
It was an unbelievable experience.
And did the raccoons come out while
they
you were
did.
There?
We had raccoons and turtles and
bats.
Birds overhead, bats. Mm-hmm. Bats under the stage, always. Oh, it was such an amazing experience. And that was actually my first professional gig in New York.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's starting almost at the top.
It was a great time.
Now, we mentioned that the run of Black Tie right now is through March 27th, and you don't know whether you'll be continuing with it or it'll be moving to some other theater or whatever. But if not, what else do you have in on tap, Carolyn?
Auditioning. Right after this, I go straight to an audition.
You
so
still
you
have
really
to audition?
Never know. Oh, yeah.
They don't just
audition.
Say, send me Carolyn McCormick?
I wish they would. They don't. You audition.
All right.
I just came from one. So, yes. I'm
really?
Very
you have an I haven't had an audition today. I'm the only one in the room without an audition.
It's awkward.
Well,
You're going on
maybe
tour.
You'll get one, Greg.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Do
yeah.
you have anything else that you're doing other than the CD?
I'm going back to my singing. I'll be going doing some concerts out in L.A. and San Diego and Palm Springs and doing all that kind of stuff. It's my music that I love.
It's good to have a double career.
I guess so.
It's Greg nice. Edelman plays Curtis, Carolyn McCormick plays Mimi, and Ari Brand plays Teddy in the world premiere of A.R. Gurney's Black Tie, which is at the Primary Stages at 59E59 Theaters at 59 East 59th Street. And it is running through March 27th. Again, for ticket information, you go to our show page at WNYC.org. And I want to thank you all so much for being on our show today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.